Hello.
So are we on the air yet?
We are.
Hello.
Recording.
Greetings from London, everyone.
I'm so glad we could fly all the way over to London for our show this week.
Yes.
Yeah.
So great.
But don't touch the Queen.
I wouldn't touch the Queen. I'm going to touch the Prince.
Oops.
Hello.
Prince Charles?
No. I know he's the one you want.
No, baby. I don't think so.
It's true.
Okay, maybe a little bit.
The funny thing is, I never thought I'd say this, but I'm going for Harry now. I mean, William was the hot one when I was like a teenager, sort of. Well, older, young adult. Mm-hmm. And now Harry's the hot one.
He is, and he's a bit of a hellraiser, right?
That's why.
Yeah,
I think.
He's your kind of bad boy.
Yeah, unfortunately. Okay. That's why I'm not dating anyone right now.
Well, you know. Maybe you can date Alan Smithy.
Oh.
Breaking it down.
Not even going to waste time.
Wow. All right, we can talk about Alan Smithy.
Well, you know,
he probably only listens to 5 minutes of
I want to tell Alan something. We are serious, but Alan doesn't understand the premise. We are not pretending to be experts. We're not real pundits. We're coming at this as average people with somewhat above average intelligence grappling with staggering issues without the benefit of insider information.
Without being manipulated
And we're not necessarily rejecting things that we hear from the other side that makes sense. You know,
well,
is that bad, Alan?
Alan Smithy's thinking basically that we're Reagan Democrats and that we're a parody of right wingers, and it's just good comedy. There's one.
Well, I mean, you know, we are funny.
We are funny.
And that was the point.
But
I think we're talking too much about Alan Smithy.
I like his antagonistic.
No, I like it.
I love that he's antagonistic.
Alan's like my reason for living right now.
Oh,
first of all, for everyone who's listening. This is isgoodradio.com. This is what's left on... I checked that. We are broadcasting.
Yes, we are.
On the 2nd of April.
Yes.
Yep.
The day after April Fool's.
Happy April Fool's Day, everybody.
And I'm Greg Maratea.
I'm Stephen Adams.
I'm Katrina Miller.
Yes. Okay, so we got that over. Now, Alan Smithy, who we've heard, anyone who's listened to this has heard so much about, is a listener who torments
a
us
flyer on
after,
our comments.
He listens to the show.
He doesn't torment us, he comments.
Yeah, he comments. And actually, I encourage comments on the pod site, on the podcast site.
Yeah, constructive would be great.
Well, you know, I'll take negative, I'll take whatever.
I'll take whatever. I don't, you know, I mean, hey, if he thinks it's funny, it's funny. It is funny. I'm glad you think we're funny, because guess what? We're going to have our own TV show.
Really
I don't think he really thinks it's funny. He just likes
not interpreting it that way.
Yeah, he likes to just call us a parody of punditry, left wing. And he also doesn't think we're left enough, which makes me wonder. My big thing on Alan Smithy this week was it's people.
Well,
like
I saw
that.
Alan Smithy in the crowd in London and, you know, throwing things to the window.
Oh my God!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was him.
That was him.
Yeah. That guy with the weird sort of elf shoes and striped socks, and then he had like curly toes
now we know.
And a punk rock jacket.
He definitely the protest, I thought for sure. If Alan Smithy's in England, he was protesting.
He was there. I saw him.
The thing I get about when I read Alan Smithy's comments, which honestly I'm really glad we get, is that his mindset is what led to Al Gore losing in 2000. It's the purity test of the far left, that there is no difference between Republicans and Democrats, that led to Al Gore losing in 2000, which, I mean, besides Al Gore's mistakes.
And acting like cardboard.
Yeah, but which, by the way...
That was not the only reason that he lost.
Yeah, but it's part of it. And
there was some little loss.
There was some little stuff going on in Florida that you must not leave out. But, and some Supreme Court actions. Yeah. I don't know.
But the point being is
call
that...
Call me sentimental.
In 2000... call me sentimental for Bush v. Gore. but no, I mean, it was just that, like, Gore isn't pure enough. He's just part of the one-party corporatocracy that led us to having a Republican president. And for whatever these two parties are exactly the same on, behind the scenes it's horrible and has people killed around the world in horrible bombings that are illegal of other countries, there is a freaking difference between those two men. And we can see the difference now after eight years of Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we don't pass the purity test for Alan Smithy, just as I'm sure Al Gore didn't pass the purity test, and to a certain extent I don't think Obama does to him.
Yeah, it's just, definitely not.
But there are only two brands. I would love to live in a world.
Well,
where
he should form a third party if that's the case.
Yeah, a viable one.
A viable one.
And there's also who's going to win, you know, at an election.
We learned our lesson with Nader as well, who also split.
Unfortunately, you've got to be somewhat, you know, middle of the road, Reagan Democrat, or vice versa, to actually make it in.
But I think that we, if you talk to anyone who's right of the spectrum and they listen to us, they would think that we are like, I don't know, communists.
You know, could be.
And that's the problem, I think, of being
a communist with an occasional glimmer of intelligence.
And respectful.
And what?
And respectful.
Yeah,
I mean,
to a certain extent.
You know, I think my mom found you all very respectful.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know?
We steered clear of the worst topics to discuss.
You were very nice.
We could have gone
very
to some places. But, I mean, at the same time, I mean, right now it's not about being antagonistic. You know, first of all, we control the White House, and we should look at that as a moment to catch our breath and do what needs to be done.
Well, the other, there was a couple of things that in the criticism of this of last week's show that caught me. One was, you know, we didn't speak about foreign policy, which is not true. He just didn't listen to the end when we spoke about how significant the.
I thought that was funny, knowing that we had spoken about it.
Yeah, but he said
that's why I know he's only listening to the first part of the show. He probably can't tolerate the entire thing.
Who does? Who can? But he said, you know, we didn't talk about foreign policy, but we do reserve it for bits of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole goal of the show is to watch what's unfolding.
But we're all,
in American politics
right
now.
We're tracking 44, baby. Yeah. That's what's going on. Yeah. And right now, the world stage is unfolding before him and before us.
I think Obama and I think their team right now is playing the best politics, as you know, of his presidency, which is of course only whatever 70 days old. But they seem to have gotten it together, in as much as they fired the Rick Wagoner from General Motors, announced an Afghanistan policy, fired Rick Wagoner, and then jumped on a plane. That where he was every if you didn't like either of those two things, it was going to be washed away, and it was going to be about him on the international scene.
Right.
Yeah.
That is
him giving an iPod
true.
To the Queen and so on and so forth.
which before this show, I watched O'Reilly a bit on my way home.
Was he upset with that gift?
Sweet.
No, he said, I think it's a cool gift, and Major whatever the reporter for them.
Major Garrett.
Major Garrett is in England right now, and he said it's been confirmed that Buckingham Palace had, through back channels, said that the Queen would welcome an iPod.
Well, I mean, because they weren't because these were not meant to
be.
Well,
that's good they checked on it this time.
Yeah, that was better than the DVDs. And actually, when I looked at the DVD situation, it was a box set of very specific DVDs. It wasn't like he picked up two DVDs and flung them on the desk.
But still.
I know.
The comparison of DVDs and the pen holder.
It was not thoughtful. This was more thoughtful because it was specifically geared towards the taste of the Queen.
You know,
and
it was also
at the Best Buy down the street.
It was also accompanied
American product.
It was also accompanied by the
Worldwide.
Rare songbook signed by Richard Rodgers.
Yes.
And one of her favorite musicals is Oklahoma. So it was very
Oklahoma,
thoughtful.
Really?
Yes, she loves that. It's one of her favorite shows. I'm not kidding. I know this sounds like comedy, Alan, but it's true.
When no one's looking, the Queen gets.
When
into
no one's looking, she gets into her.
She starts dancing.
Cowboy boots and her poodle skirt, and she gets it on with the prince.
You're a jet, you're a jet all the way.
Yeah,
Queen of England.
Yeah.
That's not Oklahoma.
No, I know, but
she doesn't know the difference. Those are the only two musicals. I don't even. What's the song from Oklahoma? I don't even know the music from Oklahoma.
Isn't it like
Oklahoma? Yeah.
No, but I mean, what is the song?
Yeah, that's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
She likes that.
As a former record collector, every
She's
time
old.
Someone
okay.
had a garage sale, they gave me those. I have like
four
copies.
Yeah, I don't know the whole thing. My brother
You should send one to England as a gift.
Here's a moldy, dusty cover.
Here's
an
offering from the
original.
States.
I think, in a weird way, I was like, what the fuck with the iPod? But in a weird way, it worked for him.
Well, it got checked out first.
Yeah, it raised my eyebrow for a moment, and then I sort of got it. Especially when I figured out it was part of a whole, you know, token gift where the songbook was there.
Right.
It was a very rare songbook signed by Richard Rodgers. You know, it was directed at her taste, and it...
It's just that you feel like, you know, you'd see Hillary Clinton or whoever is on the trip step up to the microphones and go, and the Queen's now in his top five. Or, you know,
cell phone
thing where you can text you're like that. I mean, that it just seemed like it was on. He's like, they're twittering right now.
What was the. Yeah, they're twittering. Well, I was, what was the big thing about the Queen putting her arm around Michelle?
Michelle Obama touched the Queen.
Well, no, the Queen touched her first.
No one knows that for sure.
Oh.
What do you mean no one knows that for sure? I saw the footage.
You saw it on tape?
Yeah, the whole world saw it. This is why I'm confused by everybody who's saying, she touched her. No, the Queen touched her. She put her arm around her. And then Michelle turned and put her arm around her. And this all took place in like 5 seconds.
Right.
It was like touching someone's back as they're walking.
So crazy.
And then it was like, whoa, this is a strange break. But the queen's the one that wanted to get it on first. So whatever.
Hello.
I told you.
Michelle's supposedly a big rock star over there, more than Obama.
Yeah.
Why not?
I mean,
what's going to make
them feel
better?
She's playing the role of first lady.
Yeah.
In a way that, you know, we missed.
A styling first lady.
We missed with, what's her name, Laura?
Laura.
What's her name?
And, boring. And
quickly we forget.
And Hillary was never content with that role and was always chafing at the bit.
No, that's true.
So this one's a little more traditional and people like it.
She's a little more traditional, but she also has more substance on the issues she chooses to
speak
about. Whereas I know that there were a lot of left and right wing people who praised Laura Bush for her, I guess she had a reading
her literacy program.
She's very into education.
Yeah. And people said that was actually, you know.
No, I think that was sincere. I mean, she's a librarian, and that is something that has always meant something to her.
Well, because, you know, President Bush didn't really have much to do with education or reading. Yeah. So
or even
she
reading
had
himself,
to.
Exactly. Though somehow he got through Yale, but then again, that's a legacy.
Not
because he was reading.
Yeah, not because everybody went there before, so
he sure
here
didn't
he comes.
Start reading when he was president, so hey.
No, you know, Obama said.
I was clear.
They said that Rove used to leak these stories that there was a book reading contest between him and W, and that people really didn't believe it. But like he would leak that like over the summer they would see who read more books.
Yeah. Doubting that.
Nice.
I'm just wondering. What
nice try.
That would
one would spend time figuring out how to
cat
torture
in the hat.
Us, and the other one.
One fish, blue fish.
Yeah. Well,
red
you know,
fish,
Obama
two
says
fish.
That he barely gets a chance to read anything but briefing books now.
Well, that's why I wonder how in the hell anybody's going to read a novel.
Yeah.
More from just the constant activity. You know.
All right. So what happened this week?
We're talking about that.
I mean, it's the dominant news is
God save the Queen.
Yeah,
she ain't no human being.
The broad stroke on the G20 is this: before he left, the American press, and I think probably because the White House set them up to say this, was saying he's going over there. Not so favorable conditions among the leaders in the group of 20 most prosperous nations.
Right, he had to prove himself,
and his wife a bigger rock star among people. And it turned out that he showed, again, that sort of slow, steady, I got this quality.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve and I were talking about this. What you saw with the leaders that disagreed with him was a lot of playing to the home audience.
Yeah, France being, you know, characteristically petulant.
Yes.
You know, the Germans being characteristically truculent. the Chinese coming over suggesting that we, you know, no longer be the world currency. There was a lot of cage rattling and a lot of playing to the audience before we got there.
But what I found interesting about that was he went there with what they wanted in his hip pocket. They wanted more regulations.
I think the one
announced that he wanted to get the control, like he wanted Congress to grant him the powers or to pass these regulations on, especially more than anything else, hedge funds,
right,
and unregulated, heretofore unregulated, you know, financial products.
Mm-hmm.
He went there with that already, something he was going to agree. They just browbeat him. In, you know, like threatening to storm out.
Oh, that was just such a ridiculous show, and I love the fact that he and Brown sort of made light of it, and the press understood what was meant there.
Right.
You know, it was. I hate to say it, so typically French.
Right.
You know, and we don't have to show up if you don't do it.
That was good French.
By the way, you know, Sarkozy.
Et oui, je parle français aussi, hein, mais.
He practically heralded Obama as the president of the United States in October.
Right.
I mean, so it was a little contrast.
I know, it's kind of strange.
Well, he goes back and forth. In the summer, he called him an empty suit. So, I mean, you know, it depends on which way the wind is blowing with Sarkozy.
But, I mean, the thing that was striking to me was that they gave in on stimulation, you know, you're not quite as much as the U.S. wanted, but they, you know, in stimulus spending worldwide.
Right.
And through the auspices of the IMF, which I don't necessarily trust.
Mm-hmm.
And he already went there with regulate, like, yeah, we'll regulate these things, which is awesome. I don't think we've ever seen worldwide coordination on banking regulations.
Yeah.
I'm glad, however, that he did not grant Mr. Sarkozy's wish to have a world regulating body.
Yeah.
That's just the American people would never stand for that, and actually don't blame them.
No.
Well, I mean, it would come out of the UN or something, and then nobody would take it seriously.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that struck me about the UN this week is that as North Korea plans to do a missile test, everyone's like, "This is in direct violations of UN, you know, whatever." I'm like, "And?" So.
Yeah. Are they listening?
No, they're not listening.
And of course, once again,
we're being looked to step up to the plate and tell them to step down.
Right.
Because nobody else will.
But it's only a satellite.
They're shooting off a missile.
No, it's only a satellite.
No,
it's totally only a
satellite. It was a missile test.
Joking.
No.
That's what they keep saying.
That's what the North.
Oh, okay. And they arrested those two American reporters who made their way into the country, and they're going to try them on suspicion of espionage.
Oops.
Yeah.
Don't go in there.
Yeah, you don't go in. Don't go there.
Stay in South Korea.
You know, it's interesting. There's so many North Koreans in L.A., and we never talk about that. There are a lot of North Koreans here.
Good for them.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just
glad
saying
they got out of there.
They're happy to be here.
Yeah.
But you ask them about it, and they are close-lipped.
I know. And the sad part is, I kind of think that there's a unification just waiting to happen if...
Oh, really?
Yeah, between North and South?
Yeah, well, I mean...
I wonder.
If the governments could... I mean, if the North Korean government were,
the North
Korean
government could be toppled.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, I mean, they're like brothers and sisters. It's like West and East Germany.
I don't think...
Yeah,
China,
but, you know, they're...
The wall.
Now that China's... what is it, a communist, capitalist state, whatever it is, a capitalist, communist state, they wouldn't mind having them be a capitalist powerhouse that they could most likely use to their advantage, that China could use to their advantage. It's just, you know, not going to happen.
It's not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, at all. Mm-hmm. And those people, you know, North Koreans go through a huge amount of distress because of it.
Yes, they do.
So,
as far as we know.
I'm
saying that we don't. Yeah, you know what I'm saying.
I love that
indicated by the numbers of people who are in LA.
Yeah, I love that the U.S. government announced. I read this right before I left work that they're like, oh, the missile test in North Korea will be in the next 2 or 3 days. Like proving to them that we know exactly what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the only thing they can do is alter their timeline despite those.
And the funny thing is, then they're just going to do it, and it's just like every other kind of threat or knowledge of, you know, testing that we knew they were going to do, and then they do it, and it's done, and we all kind of move on past it and wait for the next one to happen.
Well,
it's kind of strange. I mean, I wonder when the moment is that we're going to say, oh, now we know it's a nuclear bomb, and we don't want you to test it, you know?
You know.
It's like, how far are they going to get before we really go in there and
the thing
do
I don't understand is that, and also, I mean, how do you stop that, first of all?
Right, well, you got to wait until it's something that's worth it to get in there and stop.
And what are you going to do?
Depending on what it is.
The crap out of the country?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
basically.
How do we finance that?
I mean,
that?
I would guess that's the only thing they can do.
I mean, beyond financing that, it's just...
And God knows what they know that we don't know. You know, what does the CIA know about whatever storehouses they have and, you know, what kind of materials they have? I'm sure it's way more than what I know.
Oh, sure.
Because even though they've already said, basically, if we don't let them do this test, they're going to go back to, you know... Refining plutonium.
And,
outright.
Just so because if you do this, we're going to force us to do this.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, but it's only a satellite.
I think the big... Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
I mean, that gets to the whole question of, you know, what do you do? The whole world is on a march towards this. Iran is most likely going to go nuclear under, you know, Obama's first term. You know, or in this term, possibly.
What did they say? They said 10 years, like 3 years ago or something?
Yeah.
Maybe second term.
Yeah.
But
there's a couple of the intelligence reports that have been leaked is that there's a couple of key things that they just can't get their hands on.
Right.
They got everything they need, they got all the know how.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of key ingredients.
They probably had the know how 30 years ago.
One of the reasons they don't want, I think, one of the reasons they don't want to take this rapprochement of diplomatic interaction is to be able to continue this ability. They're far more powerful by saying fuck you and continuing to do what they want to do.
That's true.
Than being friends with us and being forced, because our friendship will of course have conditions.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that I think a lot of people didn't realize. Hillary's team had informal, like where they were at a summit or a group of whatever, meaning not the G20, and it had informal discussions with the Iranians. Mm. And, you know, it seems like...
This past week?
Yeah. Hmm. And to get to a point that Alan Smithy made, he was like, you know, one of the things he criticized the show for was ignoring Afghanistan, ignoring the possibility of illegal bombings. No, there's
why?
No...
Why? We've never ignored Afghanistan. We talk about it every week.
But the point being that we do talk about Afghanistan, but it's always
and
like,
Afghanistan actually relates more as we're talking about Obama even more now than ever because of the surge in troops,
right.
And of course his expectations and demands on NATO and NATO's 60th anniversary. All these things are intertwined, and I'm sorry, you're gonna say something. No, I'm saying so. You know, there's a lot hinging on that, and the existence of NATO is kind of being put on the line in a way.
I never really understood why they kept it around after the Soviet Union fell. I mean, now
I know it's sort of ironic that we're getting along so well with Medvedev, and then leaving from that lovely, you know, where we're gonna agree to lower the level of weapons in the world, and then we're gonna go celebrate the 60th anniversary of NATO.
Mm-hmm. But the larger point is, you know, here's a listener saying, hey, you're ignoring this, what's ultimately going to lead to a lot of people being killed, which I've heard not just from him, from a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your current housemate said, you know, the one week we went hung out, had a drink, and he said, your president, you know, just increased the troop levels to 17,000.
Mm-hmm.
That just means there's going to be a lot more death there. He's a total asshole. You know, Obama's an asshole. And I was like, well, this is kind of what he has to do. But what's being ignored is the larger message, the larger way to win the war is to be the people who take the coldness and the slap in the face from Iran and still stand there.
Yeah.
And go, when you're ready,
we'll talk.
And we're actually going to be serious about doing something with the Palestinians now. It's not going to be a race for our legacy, which tends to happen. I think Clinton started mm-hmm. earlier on than most presidents. Bush ignored it completely. Bush 1 started at the end of his. He wanted that to be part of his legacy.
Right.
So I think that the larger thing that he's trying to do, he's going to blow up a lot of people in Afghanistan, and we're going to be horrified by it. The Obama administration is taken to doing the same thing the Bush administration does. Every time they kill someone, they call mm-hmm. it an insurgent. They killed 20 insurgents in Afghanistan this week. And I was like, how do they have tags?
How are they?
Do they have licenses?
This is the problem with, we talked about this before, you know, there's so many versions of it, but, you know, these kinds of situations, this particular situation has been deemed necessary, that we are essentially at war with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, mm-hmm. and that's where they are.
And it's mm-hmm. going to take place in the ungovernable region of Pakistan and the border with Afghanistan.
You know,
right.
These people last week made a threat against the White House. They said we're going to do a spectacular...
Well, this is the part that I don't understand, and I want to get Chris from Kill Radio on here. I ran into him at a bar, and he's a genius brainiac, extreme left. I would love to have him on for a gentlemanly discussion. But my take on it is, you have to know this, as soon as the attack happened in 2001... the U.S. had to indiscriminately kill people. That's how it works.
Yeah.
I wish it wasn't that way.
To make people think that you're doing something.
I don't want it to be that way, but there's kind of no way around it. There's no way to leave Afghanistan now and hope that daisies sprout in the poppy fields.
Well, we don't know that these people weren't insurgents either. I mean, whatever that term really means, but it is possible
stated
that
stated enemies of our country.
Right, and it is possible that they were pointing guns, you know, right at whoever killed them,
right,
and they had to do it. I mean, it's a possibility.
There's very much a possibility, but overall, when the U.S. gets hit like that, what's going to happen, and whether you're a conspiracy theorist and think that we did it by design, mm-hmm. me personally, I think that as soon as the CIA figured out they could topple governments, and was it Honduras was the first one they just did as a kid, like went after World War II?
Let's just try this out, and then we'll work our way into the big stuff that we can do in Chile in the 70s under Mr. Kissinger.
I think it was Honduras, Guatemala, one of those countries in the early 50s, they were like, let's see if we can... It was the OSS or whatever before it was the CIA.
The OSS before it became the CIA.
Yeah, they were like, let's just see if we can do this. And then they realized, we can. And so once
it just kept happening.
Yeah, once we did that, sure, we baked in an attack like 9/11 sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens after that, unfortunately, to the listening audience that thinks that I'm too accommodating to the right or I'm a Reagan Democrat, is that the U.S. does this. We go to war and we kill people because that's what is demanded of our leaders. And it's about power and it's about corporatization. I've accepted that. What I see going on with Obama is he's not announcing himself as a man of peace, but he is trying to represent in... yeah, I'm going to go screw up Afghanistan, but Iran, Palestine, you know...
And even Iraq, because there was never any reason, real reason for us to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
To me, one of the more significant things is the fact that he is trying to diffuse the hatred in the Muslim community. You know, his smackdown of Dick Cheney that we never talked about. Dick Cheney, you know, said this, you know, that basically agreed, said, they asked him, do you agree that Obama has... made the nation less safe.
Yeah, no, we have talked about this.
And he said yes. But then Obama on 60 Minutes smacked him down and said, now what have we really gained from Guantanamo? What have we gained from torture? Name one thing. Name one conviction. Name one thing that we've actually gained from that.
The problem, it goes beyond that, is that we don't even know the kind of information that people give under, quote-unquote, give under duress is actually even accurate.
Right.
People start creating all sorts of wild stories to satisfy their torturers, to shut their mouths and stop.
And what are they going to do now?
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, this is the big mess.
Exactly.
Because
we don't,
because Europe is worried about whether we're going to ask them to take prisoners and... It's wrapping that out is going to be a
and not
a
thinking
mess.
About that beforehand. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, but then Obama capped that all off by saying, "Are we going to do this until the whole entire Muslim world hates us?"
And,
I mean,
and they're all
said that.
Over there in Cuba.
Yeah.
I think
that's one of the more significant. Like that. That should not be overlooked as a significant change for American policy. Will he do horrible things as president? Yeah, one of the reasons why, in my delusions of grandeur, I've decided I never want to be president is the fact that on a daily basis, you sign some secret, double secret executive order that means people are going to die.
Yeah.
You
yes.
ignore things like, what is it, that armament that's depleted uranium. It makes bombs penetrate stuff more, but then it causes cancer like for miles and miles around years after the bomb. Presidents signed that. They signed that with their blood. We're still going to use that. It's still an effective tool of destruction.
Presidents do. Generals do. People conceive of these things.
Yeah.
They go through huge processes.
And that's not going to change.
It's not going to change no matter what the regime is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate, but there it is.
But I guess if we were true... left wing, we'd advocate against that. We'd advocate for a smarter third way.
But I'm not going, and of course, I'm also a realist. I mean, you remove the ability to protect yourself, and trust me, something will happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just naive.
And honestly, look at what happened when Bush had 80% approval. What this nation agreed to let, what they rubber stamped, you know.
A war with no logic.
A war with no
Meanwhile,
logic.
Meanwhile, it was you know, even if you just looked at the list of people who were on those planes, you would have found yourself wondering why we were going in that direction.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or from a corruption standpoint, no bid contracts. You know,
Jesus.
Or things that people just turned a blind eye to. I heard an amazing...
Until it was much, much too late, and then they got upset and realized that we were all stained with all this blood.
Right.
Because we talk about our losses, we don't talk about the hundreds of thousands of other people who died in Iraq, most of whom were not... anything but ordinary people.
Yeah. And
so I we have to answer to that on a certain level.
And I mean, to me, that's
despicable.
Yeah, it is. It's horrible and it's despicable. And honestly, that was the reason why the show started. Was the one thing that's funny is we don't comment on the media being so lame anymore. One of the hallmarks of this show.
They are.
But when we were in the minority, when Bush was president, it was, you know, calling the press, the media on not. Reporting the facts.
Well, they had done such a good job at cowing the entire nation into this lull of fear and anxiety. And
no, they're still doing it.
Well, a different kind of fear.
Yeah.
Now I believe...
Economic fear.
Now it's economic fear, exactly.
Much more so.
Because I told you, I decided to just stop worrying about everything and to believe that it's going to be fine.
I did, too.
You did. You've changed.
That's a Reagan Democratic ideal.
Is it really?
Yeah. Well, don't exactly forget, Bill Clinton was the man from hope. Mm-hmm.
But I think that's an old, long-standing Democratic idea, going back to, what's the statement? We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Mm-hmm. I do believe that that's part of the problem. And when we're all running around with your tail between your legs, you're not going to be a very effective man or woman or person.
I mean, let's just break it down for a second. The market stopped. The stock market stopped its free fall.
Why? Obama actually,
you know, and Geithner actually produced a policy that didn't cause a tanking of the stock market, and all of a sudden a certain amount.
They produced a policy that was logical, and people responded to it. Let the tail wag the dog.
Well, as I said on the show last week, I think that the bank policy that they put in place is such that when it's all said and done, they won't have to say there was a decision made by them. Their hand will be forced into nationalizing X number of banks and letting X number of banks be broken up into pieces.
And you know what? That's the truth.
Yeah. And that, well, that's definitely. Yeah, I don't think that's.
What is the choice other than that?
Let
them figure it out on their own, because they've done such a bloody good job. Because we're in England. They've done such a bloody good job of figuring it all out for themselves.
But what do you guys get of. I might have been Sarkozy that said this is the end of the Anglo American dominated market.
Well, everybody's.
That's just the world market. I mean, just the fact that it's all intertwined at this point.
Well, the notion and that our ideas of free trade, not fair trade, our notions of, you know, let money go where, you know, it's most profitable, they're signaling, no, this is the end of that.
Well, I don't have a problem with that as a concept, and I think that that could be true. I think that it's all right to think that, as we've talked about before, that ethical issues are more important than sheer profit, sheer blind profit, because slavery was a thing that was blindly profitable for hundreds of years, and we can go on about sweatshops and things that went on well into the 20th century and things that still go on around the world, and I hate to tell you, Mr. Sarkozy, in your own country, but let me not get too carried away, but you know what I'm saying, but I like the concept,
right.
I do.
And the fact that the dollar is not, you know, the strongest monetary force anymore, and it's
for the moment,
got it right. But I mean, I think that's another thing.
It's
different values are taking over in terms of the economy and in terms of the actual, you know, the monetary unit.
By necessity, we can return to morality,
right? And it's a worldwide balance now that has to be achieved. It's not just determined on what the U.S. wants to do anymore.
I agree.
Speaking of the twin comment to that was the one the Brazilian president.
Oh,
blaming the blue-eyed bankers.
Woo, yeah. And who did he have?
This crisis was caused by no black man or woman, or no indigenous person, or by no poor person.
Oh, it was the next day. He was meeting with Gordon Brown.
He made the statement.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
You know, I fear for. I don't want a Tory government, but I just don't think Gordon Brown's going to hold on long enough.
I agree. Yeah, I think he's on shaky ground.
On one day, they commented on how at the photo op of 12 leaders, he scurries to be next to, from like one end of the room.
Pushed out to the side.
To Obama.
Yeah.
And then.
Well, the British have pilloried him for that toting, because they hated it when Blair did it.
Yeah. No.
And he's even more obsequious than Blair was.
But Blair
had his own dignity.
Blair had dignity, but he did worse things when he was a toady.
He was real. when he was holding hands with the Georgie, it was a mess.
It's a shame, too, because I always thought that Tony Blair was the guy, you know, I just thought he was, besides being a
slick.
Besides being a slick politician, he was a smart politician.
Mm-hmm.
And you look back on it now, and it's just his acquiescence on the Iraq War. The fig leaf that he presented in the Coalition of the Willing?
Yep.
It was like 13 soldiers from Poland and like two from Guam, you know, and then, you know, 1,000 from
I can't
England.
Remember all the little teeny countries that helped us out with that in name.
I know. It's too much.
The thing that I find interesting about that is that would be a classic example of how I would be furious at media. That they would take the Coalition of the Willing and not break it down to the fact that it's 80 countries that don't have, you know, really a stake in that war. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you look at what they did to Obama during his press conference. They actually gave him a pretty rough go. He's just smart enough and advised well enough and proving to be that much more of a politician to be able to have survived. I mean, Bush could never have handled follow-up questions like Obama did.
No, certainly not. His first, well, many of his foreign trips were embarrassing, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing I also liked was that the Obama administration went out of their way to say, look, when they met, when he met with the Russian president, when he met with the Chinese president, it was a very businesslike, let's get down to where we agree, where we disagree,
right,
what we can do with what we agree. And you didn't say, I looked into the eyes.
I saw the man's soul. That must have been a really good date.
It just makes me wonder if Bush is really as stupid as he appears.
Yep, I think so.
You know, I know people that know that family personally, and some of them do not believe him to be stupid. They believe him to be misunderstood.
That's what a lot of Republicans say, not just people
and
his family.
But I'm talking about people who know the family, who say
this. Yeah, but how much evidence do you need?
How
many years do you have to watch
somebody? That's what I wanted to know. And these are people who I will allow to remain nameless because they're very close to my family, but we were at a dinner and my listening to this going on and on and on, and finally my grandmother said, can you fill my glass up again? And she took a big sip of wine. She goes, let's cut the crap now. The man's an idiot. That kind of ended the end of the conversation and
so
the dinner.
There.
Yeah, so there.
Well, the dividends of that idiocy is...
I would say he seems like an idiot. I've never met him.
You know, I always felt like his dad was cringing. And
yeah.
I always felt like 41 was a bright guy. And I just felt like he was always kind of cringing behind his back.
Well, I mean, you're not the only one who thinks that. I mean, you know, there's a lot of evidence to that effect. And, you know, I can say Oliver Stone knew what was going on, but it's the basis of that whole W movie, so...
Yeah, the basis of that W movie was he was dumb.
Yep. And that his father was completely embarrassed the whole time as to what he was seeing happen.
Well,
so
he turned it into this whole... I want my approval, Dad, and I'll also one-up you.
Right.
Oliver Stone broke it down to, like, you know, a 13-year-old melodrama.
Right, which, yeah, I don't think necessarily needs to be what's going on. I think it's more just a 13-year-old mentality that wants to rule the world.
I just remember
and
another.
Got to.
An ambitious one.
And
an ambitious 13-year-old who got his revenge on Daddy.
Yeah.
I remember that comment
and on the country
Barbara Bush made to Queen Elizabeth, speaking of the Queen again. When Queen Elizabeth made some comment about him being a black sheep, and Barbara said, well, we all have black sheep in our family, ma'am. And she was kind of like, you know, referring to the Princess Margaret.
Yeah.
And it was like, ouch. And then they had the last laugh, kind of.
Oh, Britney.
Yo. I meant the Bush
fathers.
Family, the last laugh.
The Bush,
but,
family,
you know.
The Bush family proved to almost, like, if I think if Jeb. If Jed Clampett had been a Bush.
Oh, yeah, him. Sorry.
If Jeb Bush had actually been the one to run, they had the chance of being a Kennedy-like dynasty.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They most likely will have to wait for Jeb's son.
The little brown one?
Right.
The little brown one.
The one who speaks Spanish.
That was the one referred to him as a child.
It was poor.
Even the little brown kids. They're all part of the family.
Yeah. That was.
But they were shrewd. And
that was our president.
But they were very shrewd, thinking forward in this marriage that they were going to hit a whole constituency.
Oh, yeah.
Naturally.
Yes.
Within the family.
Totally.
Very good. And we'll forget that Grandpa
and
called
Bush
him a little
thought
brown
that based on his daughters, he was going to have, you know, all the drinkers in the country signed up.
Oh,
so, hey.
Well,
kind of worked.
Didn't one of them get married? Or
one of them was married.
Yeah.
To Andrew Schiff.
In a non-ceremony.
She married another Schiff?
Yep. Well, a Schiff. I don't know about another.
I don't know if it's the same Schiff as the whatever.
What, he got married twice?
No.
What?
The Schiff married Karina Gore.
Oh, whoops, maybe I'm getting confused.
Yeah.
That would be crazy.
No, I don't think that's right.
I don't think that's right.
Could you imagine...
We'll get our details straight, sorry.
Girls and one of the Bush twins that... Like,
married in the same family?
Yeah, I can see that. They probably both went to NCS, so they probably dated the same guy while they were there.
That's true. What do you guys think about the quote-unquote firing of Rick Wagoner of General Motors?
Thank goodness.
I think that we're going to see more of that.
And I think it was appropriate, and I mean, obviously it was appropriate, but I think it was very interesting how little he fought Like, I was kind of expecting to see more of a fight out of him.
Rick Wagner's head has been called for since, like, 1999.
I know. And he's, you know, kept it up and kept it up.
He dropped the ball
and
many, many things.
Stayed there.
He admitted that he dropped.
And I didn't think he would leave now, but then all of a sudden he did.
He admitted that he dropped the ball on the electric car. What was it called? The EV1?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. When that would have, well, who knows? I mean, I'm doing hindsight.
Who killed the electric car?
Did you see who killed the electric car?
I did not see that.
Oh, my God. It's chilling.
Yep. It's so sad.
They destroyed them. They took them back from their leases and destroyed them. But my favorite part was that, and it kills me because I love Honda. Honda was implicit in the same thing. Huell Hauser's looking like at a scrapyard doing his whole, like, you know, California's Gold show. Mm-hmm. And he goes, look at that car. That car looks practically brand new. And there's a Honda electric car. And they're like, yeah, they just scrap them.
Amazing.
They just put them in the shredder like with the rest of these cars.
Wow.
And they had an aerial shot of the place in Arizona where
amazing.
The electric cars went to get killed. And the one at the Peterson Automotive Museum on Wilshire, General Motors removed enough components that it could never be reverse engineered.
Amazing.
You could never figure out how to make it.
And what was the motivation?
I think at the time they launched the Hummer brand.
Oh, right. That's right. He made the Hummer an important American brand.
Yeah.
That was really good timing.
It's in the documentary, but I followed this through my car magazines. California is supposed to have X percentage of zero emission vehicles by mid-20s. I mean, mid-90s, late-90s.
Mm-hmm.
And General Motors was like, screw it, we got to build some. So they built this car, which, on the scale they built it, was extraordinarily expensive to sell. And the only way they could get around dumping laws was to lease it. You could lease it for a fraction of its value, but you had to give it back. You couldn't buy it at the end of your lease.
Mm.
And at the same time they did that, they launched this aggressive effort to roll back the zero emissions clause, and they won. And then they took the cars back and shredded them. Now, no one knows for sure if those cars would have lasted, you know, eons, but every owner was like, it was really reliable.
It
was really fast. They looked like they were golf cart slow.
Right.
And then they show one whipping around the track. They were actually, because electricity is either on or off, it could just turn on all this torque and the car would go.
Amazing.
And so they were like these really fast, well-made cars that they just shredded. But no, Rick Wagner, I mean, this was my take on it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't freaking believe they did this. This is bad news. This is going to be, you know, there's going to be a huge backlash. I think the politics of telling Detroit you have to go through a bankruptcy and bailing out banks is bad politics for 2012, definitely for 2010.
Well, we don't know whether they're going to get their asses kicked, too. That could come.
Yeah.
And there's already grumbling about that, and some people expect it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're saying the general the plan in the White House.
But also at the same time, isn't it a little bit disingenuous to say that the auto industry is as important to our country as banking is? It isn't.
It isn't, but I just personally don't want to see what's estimated to be 3 million people spread out pretty much over the continental United States lose their
jobs. Without a job.
Neither do I. I'm not saying that I want to see them lose their jobs. I'm just saying at the same time, if the banking system collapses, you'll have more than That's my only point.
I think the politics on a grand scale were really bad. The timing of it was brilliant because he got on a plane and it was all iPods and Queens.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
See, I don't know if I agree with you. I don't know that the politics were bad. I mean, I think it was necessary. I think that we need more tough love in all of these situations. I think the banks better get ready to have their asses
spanked.
And I think that needs to happen.
I don't think that's going to happen.
I think it will, and I think it must.
In nationalization way.
I think they're going to and I think within nationalization, you're going to see heads roll.
Yeah.
You have to.
It's also
because, I mean, essentially, what are we talking about? GM is essentially nationalized already, in a sense, and so are the banks in a sense already. So it's semantics and terminology. Heads will roll in the banking industry.
Right.
I believe that, and I think we're going to see bloodletting, and they deserve it.
You did remind me of the fact that one of the main, it's not happened yet, and I don't know when they're going to start it, but one of the main objectives for AIG is to unwind it, is to spin off what can be sold that will make money and deal
reform
with
reform it.
Yeah, and reform it and get rid of it.
Yeah, break it into pieces and sell this. Yeah,
all of these.
Because if you're too big to fail, then you're too big in the first goddamn place.
Right.
And we the laws were changed to make this, to let this thing manifest in the first place, and we now see the folly of that.
But the politics are, right now, people, I mean, Obama coined it in his 60 Minutes interview, the only thing less popular than bailing out the banks is bailing out the auto industry.
Yep.
It seems like up until now, they're bailing
why
out
is
the
that?
Banks.
Why is that so annoying? It's because of the cockiness. I mean, the cockiness of any industry is what makes you hate them so much, especially if you're going to hand them money.
Right.
So if you've got people who are driving up in limousines while they're taking your money,
flying in on private jets when there are three people and there's more staff than there are passengers, and it costs millions of dollars to maintain a year, and your country's failing, then you're not even thinking clearly.
And you have a union that is demanding not only that you keep the same benefits at this point, but possibly have more than what people throughout the country who are losing their jobs have. I think that's when you really run into some problems.
There weren't enough concessions being made on any level from the top to the bottom in that industry. And nobody wanted to give them anything and make it possible for their brethren to survive, so they're going to suffer.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. And I'm super pro-union. I just think that when I hear about what the union gets, it's so unrealistic, like no copays or fully funded health. I'm like, every year it goes up.
That was great in 1969 at the peak of this industry.
Yeah.
That's a different story.
But I remember now, just now, I think before when we were doing like a practice show or two, you and I, Katrina, I said, I'll judge the amount of change that Obama brings, whether it's truly revolutionary change, by what he does to the UAW.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this week he threw it down and said, you know what? I don't even have to do this to you.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are going to go into bankruptcy.
Right.
In bankruptcy, we'll
you
back up
decide.
The cars and we'll make it so it's the fastest
bankruptcy.
I've
already seen the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
And we will, and when you're done, the union will be revolutionized, the bondholders will be boned, and General Motors will merge the car company. It should. I think that that's right. I think that that's
what I'm saying. A little tough love is what is needed right now. People are, the problem with the whole
system. He didn't bail out the common man, he bailed out the banker. Thus far,
but slow down a little bit.
But he did steal the economy, man, too.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's getting a little piece of it. I mean, unless the states want to take it, but,
you're saying you're going to see the difference in your paycheck soon. You will.
Yeah,
and food stamp recipients here in California are going to see the difference.
No. And the education money got out this week.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The education money got out.
But, my big thing is, I think you're shaving at the bit for that change to happen a little more quickly than it maybe reasonably should. And
I think
banks,
to use the current pundit word of the week, the optics on tough love for General Motors and Chrysler go get bought by an Italian company. I'm freaking Italian. The last thing you want to do is do that.
And Fiat is a mess too.
Yeah,
so.
Fiat's like the next car company to fall apart.
And they're already closing plants all over Italy too. So
seriously, on the slip
but,
on the banana
peel
level
some
of
nonsense
stupidity,
a little bit,
Fiat and Chrysler is like the dumbest.
Yep.
I know, Fiat, what happened to Fiat? Fiat used to be a brilliant company,
Fiat used to be
too.
The world's largest automaker.
But isn't that part of that family? Like, they've got some kind of Italian kind of emotional family that they don't want to listen to each other. And
yeah, the Agnellis.
It's like part of what's going on with that business.
Crazy when Lapo Elkan, the grandson that got overdosed on drugs in a transvestite's apartment.
Yeah, all that. So you got that connecting with business, kind of a problem.
Well, we have that all connected with business all over the place. It's just quieter.
The only place that Italy could survive is in Italy. I mean, the only place Fiat could survive is in Italy. And, selling cars in Europe. But the only country that would tolerate that is the person to whom a Fiat is the countryman's car.
Right.
That doesn't sell in Peoria. Like the Chrysler or Fiat.
My dad used to have a Fiat.
So did we.
Fiats were cool at a certain point.
Convertible Spider.
Yeah. My dad and mom got all these Italian cars in the mid-70s because they were giving them away at fire sale prices.
Oh.
Like
in the 70s?
Yeah. It was like 79 or something. Mm-hmm. Italy was in like a near depression.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't manufacture cars for one whole year. It was right before Fiat pulled out. That was my favorite part.
Right,
they bought an Italian car right before the company left the country. But they could only be repaired by like one guy.
Right.
When he did it, the car worked great. And it seemed really simple. Like he reached under the dashboard once and like took this little module out and put another one in. He's like, I know the car will work. But any normal mechanic couldn't get it. And I remember changing the gas filter in my dad's Alfa Romeo.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is the exact opposite brain pattern of what the American gas filter does. American gas filter comes in this way, goes from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
Theirs came in from the bottom up.
Why not?
It's awesome.
It's got to be different.
Yeah. I don't think there's any performance boost by doing that.
That's funny.
But I just get back to it. I think the optics of it are, tough love for the auto industry.
Well, I think that what's going to happen with the financial system is they're going to get their asses kicked through regulation.
Yes.
And that it's going to be a different... Because, I mean, they have to be treated differently. You can't apply the same spanking to one as you are to the other. But that's where it's going to come. It's going to come through regulation. That we've already seen that move this week today,
right,
with the G20. I think that the world is calling out for it, justifiably so, as we said at the beginning. You know, when you get to this point where things are swinging so far out of control and they're too big to fail, then they've got to be reined in.
What I actually love is Newt Gingrich said something about if a bank or financial bank becomes too big to fail, it should be dissected. You know, it should be broken up into its components. But then he said when the Obama administration applied it to like hedge funds, he's like, well, those aren't regulated. That actually, you know. He backed off.
Should leave them
state.
Alone.
Yeah, you know what? You can't win with these people. You know,
percentage is in there.
If I believe it, it's fine. But if you believe, it's true about that, but not for that. I mean, please. You know, everything needs some sort of oversight.
Right.
This is the problem.
By the way, this was a week that the Republican governors had to put up or shut up on stimulus money. Palin.
Yep.
Sanford.
Yes.
And was it Pawlenty? No, I think Pawlenty said he's taken it all.
Jindal didn't, though.
Jindal. The three that are definitely running.
Right.
Didn't take
that money. They think they're running, but
Alaska's not happy with Palin for doing that.
No.
I just saw a couple of interviews.
Full problems.
But, yeah, I know. And Ted Stevens.
Yeah, that actually
being let go.
Yeah, yeah.
Kookiness.
That is really bizarre.
It is kind of bizarre.
That is bizarre. It's either extremely...
And it's the Justice Department that screwed up in that situation, right?
Yeah, they're saying the Bush Justice Department withheld information.
And Eric Holder was just mortified at what he found out about, and so he had to, like,
he said, yeah,
pull
he said
it all down.
Information that would aid in his defense was withheld. Therefore, we're not going to...
Jesus.
We're not going to pursue this.
Wow. That's craziness.
Immediately, the Alaskan Republican Party said, well, we need to have an election, because...
Right now.
That election was the reason why.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, God, if I were him, if I were him, I probably did it, and I should be in this shit anyway, but...
He did it. He just didn't have the right to defend himself.
Right.
And speaking of that, we didn't talk about Blagojevich being indicted on what...
Did he finally get indicted?
He got indicted. I don't know. I think it was 9 counts. They're investigating 19 people that are surrounding him.
I love Blagojevich.
19.
I do too.
I love that guy.
He's
going to get a nice TV radio show or something.
We don't know what's going to happen, but they're putting him through the
next
mill.
Rush.
We don't say that. We want him enough.
I know.
And that other one can't go away soon enough.
There's a statistic on Republican talk radio, while large and popular, has an aging audience. Their audience is average age is 67, which is up from a few years ago.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they said that the internet is the domain of the liberals.
The young.
Right.
Oh, the liberals.
Well, that's good.
The young liberals. That's what they said.
Okay.
And they say it's growing in importance.
Growing in importance. I think
everyone's
just elected
Twittering.
A president, kid.
It pretty much did, yeah.
Well, figure it out there, guys.
Obama outlined his plan for Afghanistan, which was we're not trying to do anything but be able to launch. I mean, he didn't say it in so many words, but all we want to do is launch attacks.
Yeah.
Wasn't there an aspect of trying to help them out and, like, you know, try to help society become stronger?
Am I crazy that I thought I heard something like that? I think he said that in as much as aiding them economically will diffuse the insurgency.
Right.
That we would do it, that we would engage in it, but we are not trying to.
I know we're not trying to
vacate the nation,
right?
And Hillary's team keeps leaking that we any Taliban. Hillary, I think actually Hillary herself said, any member of the Taliban that felt like they had to join because of pressure, or you know, there was violence, there was threats, unless they did, if they deserted and renounced the Taliban, they were trying to work out.
They could come to Guantanamo with everybody else.
They could come to Guantanamo, or they could join the
crypt
or something.
Camp X.
We got a nice place for you guys to stay.
So, yeah, they're sending out mixed signals on
Where's your white flag?
I don't think Obama's, and this is cynical, and it's, you know, not idealistic. I don't think Obama's got any interest in other than...
Going there and killing people?
Killing people.
weeding out, exterminating the enemy.
He does
the real enemy.
And he definitely the real enemy to deal with that respect. And he, you know, he's got a bunch of countries to deal with that.
Yep.
But I mean, it, you know, Bill Clinton said it best in a speech after his presidency. You can't kill, capture, or detain all of your enemies.
Everybody, yeah.
Right.
You have to make friends, which is why I think that the significant thing is that Obama's definitely, I think his team is working backdoor channels to establish, and definitely in public, the Islamic Republic of Iran is a very significant, you can't underestimate what that means in diplomatic terms. Mm-hmm. What that signal means to the ruling forces, mm-hmm. the clerics in Iran. They don't believe him, but it's the first time they've been acknowledged.
Yeah, it's the beginning, though.
Right.
It's the beginning of some kind of connection that could be made, possibly. Might not work.
Because Israel's got a right-wing mm-hmm. government that's just going to torment the Palestinians into another war. Torment mm-hmm. Hamas into another disaster.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Netanyahu's back in.
Netanyahu.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that wild? What, was it 20 years that
he was
there?
That's crazy.
Something like that. 10, 12, something like that, yeah.
Oh my God, it's
he's
just
been
so
waiting.
Surprising.
PB's been waiting to come back.
Yeah.
Since then.
Wow.
But you know, the left-wing candidate, that whole push into Gaza under, supposedly directed by Dick Cheney, supposedly said, go ahead and do it. That was for their domestic politics.
Mm-hmm.
And even the left-wing candidate, mm-hmm. I think she was the chairman of defense, whatever they call it, the secretary of defense
right.
in Israel. She mm-hmm. was part of that, you know, blowing up Gaza while they have one arm tied behind
right.
their back, humanitarian mm-hmm. crisis. I mean, there's probably no prospect for peace, is what I'm trying to say, whether it was Benjamin Netanyahu, or I can't remember, it's like Libby. I can't remember her full name.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I can't remember it either.
But Netanyahu is, you know, it's just it's instigating disaster.
Yeah.
It's instigating a big freaking disaster.
Well, here we come.
I know. All right, well, we're near the end of the show, unless anyone's got any other
dun, topics. Dun, 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 dun. No, I don't have anything else to say.
You're going to sing God Save the Queen now?
Yeah.
Go for it.
This week, Obama's neither Reagan, FDR, LBJ, or Carter. He's
what?
Barry Obama.
Oh, gangster.
He's Barry Obama.
Wow, you finally are letting him, you're taking his training wheels off.
I would say, if I were to compare him to a previous president, he's Bill Clinton's, like when Bill Clinton would do a victory lap in Europe and they loved him. But this is the thing that was not tangible prior to the election, was how, well, you kind of hoped it would be this way. Well-respected.
Right.
I believed it was tangible. I think it was just something that hadn't been proven.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly. He had to stand up for a little bit of it this time. It wasn't like a victory lap where everyone was just like, oh, we love you because you won, mm-hmm. which they did.
Now it's like, let's see you on your feet and what you're all about.
Yeah.
Right.
And in action.
Can you play?
Yeah.
And he's playing.
And he did that thing where he was a strong leader, but he did exactly what he said, we're going to listen and lead.
Right.
And I think he did a remarkable job. At least they portrayed him as doing that.
That's what we know.
Well, that's what we know.
Heard.
I mean, there are certainly a lot of critics.
You know, there are.
And this was a lot of talk.
Yeah.
This was a lot of talk by a lot of hot air, you know, puffing people. So
well, but you know,
we're
it's the first gathering
of
all these little beasts in one room. And
right. But what I mean is they're, you know, kind of holding him to task. And, you know, what is everybody else putting up at this point? You know what I mean?
Right.
For sure.
What's Sarkozy, you know, suggesting that we do and change around?
Right.
So
he's just like, regulate, and regulate some more.
Right.
Yeah, but you know, as someone said, it's always easy for the impotent to recommend chastity.
And at this point,
you know, I mean,
even
who are the French anyway?
That much. At this point, even regulating isn't going to do the trick. You got to
first. Still,
yeah, I mean that's
so
kind of
like
what Obama was saying. It's like
suggestion.
You can talk all you want about this, and you're absolutely right that we need these things in place. But without stimulating the system, the rules would be irrelevant if there's nothing going on.
The one thing that, and Republicans can't pick up on this because the public can't pay attention to the nuances of this, the criticism that I've had about, hey, you know, the whole notion of the deficit, the whole notion of the fact that he's printing money and it may cause ridiculous inflation at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You can win that debate with a skillful political staff in the United States, but when you go overseas, and that's basically the German position.
The German position. It's also the Chinese position, even more so.
Yeah.
And then I mean, they're talking about replacing us as the world economy. We know, and turning it into a virtual gold-based global currency. But
I mean, that's where
trillions.
That's where the criticism of him bore fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are people outside of our country who have to watch their bottom line are saying, you know what, this is against your the basic financial, you know, the basic financial tenets. You're baking in a huge inflationary period just to get us out of this bad one.
And just?
Well.
Okay, I'm sorry, but you know, we can stop. Let's move out of the theoretical into the real. We keep talking about not wanting people to suffer, and something has to be done. And if it causes inflation, so be it. If that means the jobs come back, then I'm all for it.
Well, they said
because that means eventually you can swallow that.
And you can start over again.
They said the psychology of the German position is the memory, and it's not the man on the street, but the memory of the people in power there of the wheelbarrow full of
Deutsche Marks being burned for heat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've referenced that before.
They said that's really their motivating force. Now, they've had a really...
We're not going to get to that problem. We're not going to get to that point. Angela Merkel was talking about that. We're not going to get to that point. It will not ever be that bad.
She says that, but she was the big anti-inflationary, let's limit the stimulus person. Wow, right. By the way, they have a $3,000, I think it's 2,400 euros or 2,400 Deutsche Marks. If you get rid of a car of a certain number of years old in Germany and buy a new car by a certain period of time this year, you get like essentially $3,800 back from the German government. That's because
they're trying to keep up their auto industry.
Is the largest employer in Germany.
Yep.
Well, they make very nice cars there.
Yeah, I know. And you know, she's got her own stimulative policies too. None of which, though, I think amounts to printing money.
You know, she doesn't have a country the size of ours either, nor the dependent countries like hers that, you know, need us to survive and function.
That's true.
So, I mean, people need to put this into perspective. I'm a little tired of them foisting their entire agenda on us and then screaming when it isn't completely satisfied.
Well, that's what they're supposed to do as the leader of their country.
Yeah, so. I suppose so.
Mm-hmm.
Let him talk.
Because we're American,
go ahead.
We can just say...
Go talk.
We got it under control.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, again, Barry's thing.
I got this.
We've got this.
Yeah.
It's every week he just comes out and saying, we got this, and then somehow it seems like he's true. That what he's saying is true.
Holding steady.
It's working.
It is working, to a certain extent. The market almost hit 8,000 or went over 8,000 for the first time.
To a certain extent, I think we're seeing progress. Why are you so reticent about...
There's a certain amount of fiscal ups and downs. There's a certain amount of laws of gravity.
It's not done yet.
I know that it isn't done yet.
The Fed,
I'm not saying it's over yet by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm saying we're seeing quick results.
I agree with you, but the way Bernanke portrayed it was the money that we're printing is in the accounts of people's banks. We're just changing the dollars in the bank's accounts with the federal government, the Treasury. And when it comes back in, it'll just go back into the Treasury. It won't be lost out there. We won't have to, you know, tighten up monetary policy and ratchet up interest rates to get that money back. But the reality is, that's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily true. If that money remains out there, there's a shitload of dollars in the world, shitload of dollars in the United States, inflation comes on hard and strong, which was a big fear, a double-dip recession. Like, that happened to Reagan. Mm-hmm. And they had to use interest rates to break the back of inflation, which they raised up to 19%.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what Angela's talking about. And she doesn't want that now that we're much more
wild. But I mean, what's the other option right now?
I know.
That's what I always come back to. All this high flying talk.
And we've been through that period before.
And then what are you going to do?
Got through the other side. So
I agree.
Because here's my problem. Here's my problem with all of that. They're not. I mean, I'm listening to what they're saying, and I agree with some. I'm not saying that what they're saying is necessarily wrong, or that I even disagree with what I'm hearing. But what I'm trying to address in my frustration, my growing frustration, is, unless you're prepared to offer detailed and very, very specific ideas about governing and dealing with this system, you need to understand your position, you know, right. when you're talking about another country, especially given the relationship of their country to ours.
I agree, and if you look at Germany,
and that sounds like American arrogance, but it's just simply a question of scale.
Yeah, no, it's true, and we, you know, they see it as our, what is it, unsustainable financial institutions caused this problem.
And they were right there with us. And so, I mean, yeah. I'm tired of the blame. Again, this finger-pointing is so exhausting. Because, you know what, at some point, everybody's got to take responsibility for the fact that if you didn't buy the toxic assets, they wouldn't be impacting your country. Well, so what the hell are you talking about?
I know. The
world people know that, and they're very happy they didn't.
Let me just ask you a quick question. In your pile of stuff, do you have anything on the GOP budget?
Yes. A little bit, but I've forgotten.
Is it formed yet?
it actually is formed, but it was pretty funny when they came out with this outline with no numbers.
Yeah. Oh, so they still haven't fleshed out.
No, they fleshed it out. They fleshed it out, but I don't have the details. I don't have the details. That was just so embarrassing. Even Newt Gingrich came out today and said, you know, if the Republicans don't get their shit together, this is from Newt Gingrich, that there's going to be a third party.
Yes, he did.
Because he's saying the ultra right wing party, the ultra right wing faction of the Republicans is still dominating, and they leave no room for anyone else.
Yes.
And the Rushes of the world don't leave room for anybody else. It's crazy. And when they make embarrassing moves like that one, lose all credibility.
There was a big behind-the-scenes split between, I think Eric Cantor was like, don't do this. And Bonnier and someone else said, let's go out there with this budget that's half-baked. I'm very curious to see.
But then Cantor was right behind them when they gave it.
They forced him. They forced him.
Well, who knows what really happened.
Well, we don't know what really happened.
I think he still wanted a photo op.
Yeah.
By the way, I realized that the current budget director is like in your family with Cantor.
Oh, no
you
shit.
Look like him too.
Oh, really?
Oh, Ersaj.
Oh, wow.
Ersaj, whatever his name is. Yeah.
Awesome.
The tall, skinny.
Big Adam's apple, bulky
dark
nose.
Hair. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was wild. I was like, wow, asymmetrical look, he belongs
chin.
In the family too.
Right.
So I just thought I'd throw that
my
in there.
I missed my opportunity to go into government.
Oh, you haven't missed it. You could go do it now.
There's time.
Go in there right now.
You're the right age.
They're about,
Greg Maricaia goes to D.C.
There's a young Republican congressman that's 27. I can't remember his name, yeah.
Well, we all, of course, know about Harold Ford and how he did it right out of college.
Right.
Or, I guess, business school.
There are people that I know in college that would rush to the microphones to talk about my completely... I mean, I make W look like a genius when it comes to my college days.
Shut up.
I make W look like a button-down student that like,
awesome,
read
dude.
Every weekend.
Got any pictures? Any footage?
I don't have any footage. I'm sure there are some pictures.
Look, we're not going to start talking about, you know, how bad we look compared to W.
Yeah, I won't allow that. I will not allow that.
You don't need to go there.
But, yeah, I could just picture someone going, dude, on his 21st birthday.
He was so dumb.
Holy shit, man.
He just smoked a lot of pot and passed out in a chair.
Something like that, for the most part.
Okay.
I was talking about that in the past tense.
Yeah. Hey, I can't do drugs anymore.
Nope.
I tried. I can't.
All right, well, at least you tried.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Yeah.
You the old college try.
Okay, with the college try.
Trying.
All right. So is that the show? What is everyone? Do you want to call it Reagan Carter?
No.
LBJ, FDR, or...
I think JFK Barry and
Obama?
Clinton.
Ooh.
JFK. I mean, in terms of similarities, I would say those two. But really, as I've been saying all along, I think that the guy himself is emerging.
He is.
Yeah.
I think he did. You called it at the press conference.
Yeah,
he started to really become like grow into his role.
He's got an edge, and I like it.
He definitely, and he just, I think he has the earnestness of JFK. I like that because he's not the slickness of Clinton. So
yeah,
but he's a skilled politician.
But
he is a skilled politician, but you don't feel like he's dripping with grease.
Yeah, it's true.
I haven't gotten that feeling yet.
Well, yeah, you know,
so
Slick Willie, he was not for nothing, there was a time when I really liked Bill Clinton, but Slick Willie was an appropriate name.
The problem with Bill Clinton was that the press, knowing that he was Mr. Slick Willie, came at him with issues that were very difficult to come down, like, if you do this, you've alienated this people, there's only two answers to this question, and he would find this ultra-slick third answer.
Yeah.
That would just,
but you know what? Like, why should he allow himself to be trapped into those tired paradigms that, that clever little reporters give you? This or that, or, and there's nothing else.
Snake-like.
It was snake-like.
I think.
I liked him,
but I think it was more. I think it was more because he, you know, had such an interesting private life that he kind of spilled over into the rest.
That's what it was all about.
Because he was, you know, I mean, listen, we had a very prosperous time under this man.
We did. He was,
and the world was it wasn't relatively peaceful. There were a lot of things going on that we're still dealing with now. They just weren't addressed in the way that they could have been had the Republicans not been at his heels the entire time.
Yeah, true.
Which is a shame, an everlasting shame on that party. It really is. I really do believe that. I think they lost sight of what was going on in the world like everybody else did, caught up in the stupid scandal when we really should have been addressing the very things that are manifesting in our lives right now.
Well, that's
and they were much smaller then.
And you can criticize us or me for not being too purist left, but the beauty of the game is that Obama's team has got it. Like, even when I didn't like what
getting
he...
It.
But see, I don't care about purity. You're the one that cares about
that. No. The criticisms we get are always about purity.
Yeah, well, they can... That's fine for them.
But the thing I would say is that I care about us keeping... I want the Democratic side of the corporatocracy. I want the Democratic side of the military-industrial complex. I don't want the run-rampant Dick Cheney side of either of those two.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm seeing is these guys know how to play the game, and it's so effective that the Republicans can't launch that, take him down. Like, as soon as Bill Clinton walked into office, the Republican mantra just
attack machine went into effect.
And Obama is so popular now; he's at 66%. It's probably going to take up a notch or two because he went to Europe. He's 66% the day he fired Rick Wagner.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, like, the beauty of that is that it's dismantling the attack machine. They don't know what to do. And
well, also, they've been so dysfunctional about whatever they have done.
You know, many people think that the many people think that, and you might agree with this, Maritea, but they think that, you know, that right now it's all well and good for us to for these things to happen, like the firing of Wagner and the regulation of banks, which will probably result in other, I believe, in other heads rolling in the banking and financial system. And that that it's also satisfying a certain populist rage, but down the line, Obama may regret these moves. I don't agree that he will. I think that it would be proven to have been the best thing to have happened.
The move I think he's going to regret, the two moves I think he'll regret are the printing of money and the argument he made that you have to spend it now in order to hit the growth targets down the road, and then not find the political will in the Congress to do what it takes to get our economic house back on track to some sanity. I don't give a shit. We were criticized. I was criticized for saying, you know, like if you cut Medicare or Medicaid a point or something. But
he didn't like my comment about raising the age, or we both agreed
exactly,
it was rich.
Yeah.
I mean, 1 or 2 years. Yeah, you're right. Some people are living on that only. You're absolutely right.
Look, the person who.
But we're trying to find a way for them to have money a lot longer.
Yes.
This is what we're trying to explain.
Everybody.
Exactly.
And everybody. Because you know what?
Utilitarian.
It's not, you know, again, it's
I bet you the argument to that is cut the $600 billion defense budget. But
oh, hell yeah, I'll agree with that one, too.
Yeah, but the problem is it's not going to happen.
No, nope,
it isn't going to happen.
The politics of the United States...
It's already been set in motion.
As soon as 9/11 happened, the politics of the United States dictated that unless you were a kamikaze Democrat, you were going to maintain the military-industrial complex.
Right.
You were also going to indiscriminately bomb from 3,000 feet and call it killing, you know, insurgents when it not necessarily
well,
was.
Well, not that we hadn't.
You're going to blow up families in their houses. You're going to blow up wedding parties.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that was baked in.
Right, and not that we hadn't been doing that under Clinton, because we did a lot of that under Clinton as well.
We did it.
Of course, we did.
That's what happens. But when that happened, that shit was baked in. So to rip on us for talking about raising the age or calling them entitlements when they're actually what people live on. Hey, you know what?
No. They're referred to as entitlements. I don't believe that. I mean, it's an obnoxious term, but I think that people.
Well,
we didn't bring that into existence.
Yeah.
But you know, entitlements might. You know what? If I'm paying into the system my entire life, I do expect it. It's a form of pension.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't I expect something back from it?
It's one part of the mosaic of what's going to keep us alive when we're older. But, I mean, my thing is that if anyone's ever gotten serious about their checkbook, if anyone's ever gotten serious about, you know, thinking about retirement, they become at least a moderate Democrat, a Democratic leadership Democrat, or a moderate to conservative Republican, because the plain arithmetic of it all, you know, it comes true.
Mm-hmm. And well, sure, logic does not necessarily have to necessarily fall into party lines.
Right.
There are just some things that are inescapable. And if you look at trying to make money go over, I mean, if you're trying to make money cover a certain area, there are sacrifices that have to be made.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's not, you know, whether you're talking about a family with X amount of dollars and whether Jimmy gets the book he wants or Sally gets the backpack. I mean, choices get made. Or nobody gets anything for a while and then we can all get something better together later on. I don't know. I mean, or maybe mommy and daddy decide, I'm not eating tonight so I can feed my kids.
Right.
You don't know. I mean,
by the way, on that
these
level,
are tough choices.
The Obama administration is expanding spending, and I agree with it. They expanded the social safety net. Mm-hmm. Their tax plan rewards people, you know, the go-to-work welfare plan made it impossible for people to pay for, like, they would make less money if they went to work for McDonald's and picked themselves up by their bootstraps and if they just sat at home.
Right.
You know, like, I'm for what Obama's done on those levels. But to get back to your point, I do think that there's a point where what he said he has to act on, which is when we get back on our feet, we do have to start looking at how the budget is projected years out, because that will kill the dollar.
Right.
That will cause inflation.
They are looking at how it's affected years down the line. I mean, the budget director this week was just talking about that,
right,
about what the whole scenario is for the $1.3 trillion this year, extended out 10 years, extended out 20 years, right, and it's just, this is what you have to do now.
Right.
So,
and they are looking at that. Someone who is definitely tied to, my livelihood is tied to television,
mm-hmm,
DVDs,
right,
you know, to a certain extent, commercials, but not all that much. Like, if this whole thing ground to a halt, that would affect me.
Mm-hmm.
So I know they have to do what it takes now. But, I mean, Angela Merkel was like, Angela, however you correctly
pronounce
it.
Angela.
She was like, she was the voice of, you know, hey.
Rein it in. Yeah, but
gotta,
it's not like we don't know. I mean, if they could have figured out another way to do this, I think they would have. You know, I don't think they're just throwing money into the mix because they, for the hell of it.
No, that's true.
I mean, there is economic theory that weighs into why this is what's being done based on the Great Depression, among
right,
other things.
Right.
So it's
true,
not like it's totally a shot in the dark.
No,
you know?
And
there's
and
a little bit of evidence behind it.
For the month
it's gonna
of,
work,
the
don't
end
know,
of the month
but
of March and the beginning of April, the stock market seems to be rallying to an acceptable low.
Yes.
And people
but
are
but up from an abysmal low.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And people are breathing easier. So, but anyway, all right. So we're over. Anyone? Last comments?
I think Alan Smithy putting us on the defensive has made our show better.
I do.
I think we talk about him too much.
I love him.
To me, the big thing is, what are you going to do about this?
Are we, about what?
Are we just going to
about what?
Are we just going to pull out of Afghanistan and cut the defense budget? Are we?
That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
I can't do a show each week advocating that. This is not going to happen.
Well, you know, this could be the anti-war.
You could. You could have that position. I could have a different position. You could say something
yeah,
different.
This is why I want to get Chris on the show.
Yeah, fine.
Because Chris can argue.
And Eric Cantor. And
either
and
position.
Anyone else we can get on.
No, here. Chris will argue the
anarchy standpoint.
Anarchy stand,
mm-hmm,
you know. But he's extremely, I mean, he's got one of the most, God, I can't remember what I said when I was drunk. It's like one of the most amazing brains in Los Angeles, but I didn't say it that way.
Yep.
Comprehensive brains. I mean, he's pretty. And he's an anarchist.
He's a smart guy.
So
we'll
you know,
well,
I'd like to hear his position.
We'll get him on.
What he'll do is he'll change the fundamentals of what we're talking about.
All right, I'm signing
well,
off.
For that night, anyway.
Okay, so it's been as good.
See ya.
She begrudgingly did the show this week.
She never wants to come on.
Every week she said that. She's like, I don't
want to do the
show.
Exhausted. Oh. I know.
Today.
Well, your body's repairing itself.
I know.
Anyway, all right, this has been as good.
Good night, guys.
Good radio. Good night.